Welcome to Career Tools. This is Wendy.
And this is Kate.
Today's cast, Time Management and the High S, part 2 of 2.
The questions this cast answers are, what are High S's strengths and weaknesses when it comes to time management? What can a High S teach other styles when it comes to time management? What can a High S learn from other styles when it comes to time management?
If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
It's here. After months of development, we're excited to unveil our Pathways to Professional Excellence, an innovative license structure tailored to support your career at every stage. From entry-level positions to executive roles, we've created a comprehensive system to boost your professional growth. No matter where you are in your career journey, we have the resources for you. Career tools for career development, manager tools for effective team management, and executive tools for strategic leadership. This isn't a simple update. It's a transformation in how we empower your career. Each pathway is designed to meet the specific challenges of your career phase, ensuring manager tools evolves alongside you, offering relevant resources exactly when you need them. Are you ready to take your career to new heights? Your personalized pathway to success is just a click away. Let's turn your professional goals into achievements together.
Kate, last week we talked about High S's and their tendency sometimes to forget their own personal productivity, forget the things they're supposed to be doing for themselves. When somebody else asks for help, they tend to go help that person. And also their tendency to be disturbed and not get as much done when change is happening to them or around them. This week, we're going to pick up with speeding up decision making.
Yeah. And this is a great recommendation for a lot of people. So if you're not High S and you're listening, something to think about. High S's make decisions slowly because they want to be sure that they've considered all the factors, short-term and long-term. They've collected everyone's viewpoints and that everyone is comfortable with moving forward. And while this is great for big decisions, it's a valuable strategy when you've got something big that affects a lot of people. High S's apply this strategy to every decision, no matter how big or how small, which can cause things to be slowed down enormously. This is a lot of work. It's a lot of sampling. It's a lot of, you know, talking to people. And oftentimes, in my experience, the first time you talk to them, they're not into it. And then you have to come back and it's a longer conversations. And High S's, of course, wouldn't want to pressure anybody. Mm-hmm. Ends up being a operationally burdensome process system to utilize. And so we have some recommendations. One way to overcome this is to develop a rubric for the amount of time you will give a decision or for the number of people you'll consult whilst choosing. This is really a personal equivalent of organizational sign-off levels. Organizations often have rules such as for a contract up to $20,000, a manager can sign. For a contract between $20,001 and $100,000, a director has to sign. Or for any contract larger than $100,000, the CEO must be involved. So levels. Reflecting in many cases, it doesn't have to be budget, but reflecting in many cases, the scope to a certain extent of the project, how many people it will affect, which budget is a good proxy for, mm-hmm. is definitely something to think about.
Mm-hmm. So a personal equivalent might be when I create a new tracking spreadsheet for the team, I will give all of the team members one review. I'll show it to my team members. And if they want to change something, I'll change it. And that's it. They just get one chance at changing it. If the team member is actually going to use this spreadsheet on a daily basis, I'll give them two chances. So I'll change it once and then I'll show it to them again. And then they get to change it again. I will give my boss 3 rounds. So I'll show it to my boss. I'll make the changes. I'll show it to him again. I'll make some changes and then I'll show it to him again because, you know, bosses. And then I will put the spreadsheet into a product no more than 3 weeks after I start, no matter how many reviews anybody has had. And that sounds quite harsh because who knows if it's working, you know, if it works for everybody or not. But if you don't put it into production, you will never know if it works, because people will forever tell you, oh, that's not quite right. And do you think you could center that title? And I don't like that shade of green that it goes when it's a green. And you just don't know how things work until people start using them. So it's better to start using them.
It's also worth reminding ourselves that once the spreadsheet goes into use, that we still can make changes, small ones.
Yes, of
course. We can change the color green. There are going to be iterations as the work changes. We have spreadsheets that have been in use but get changed every quarter because of our thoughts around how it could be better. It's kind of like when somebody brings you an idea. When they bring you the idea, you have ideas around it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily, when you're creating the idea, come up with all those little details around it, right?
Yes, because you're not putting it into place. You just have the core sort of idea, right?
Yeah, right. And so there's value both in the original idea and in the iterations that happen. And iterations are going to happen while it's in production or not. So let's get to production. Let's test it. Let's find out what it could be so that we can use it. Another way to approach decisions is to ask a series of questions to find out how much attention a decision deserves, which can be very helpful for us. For example, you can give the decision, let's say, a score between 1 and 5 on a number of things. Impact. What's the potential positive and negative effect on the team and company? You can rank that 1 through 5. Also, urgency. 1 through 5, how time sensitive is this decision? I have to tell you, the other day, Mike asked me to rate something 1 to 10. And he said, and 1 is the highest. And I said, are you sure?
One's never the highest.
I said, can we just make it easy and 10 is the highest? And he said, yes. And I said, great, because I knew that every single, because he was going to ask me again, right? Like, how are we doing? And I knew that every single week would have to remind myself that to invert the scale. Yes. So we'll let you choose your own scale because these are your own decisions. You're deciding 1 to 5 yourself. So if you want 1 to be the highest for yourself, fine.
Or 1 to 7 or A to B or A to Z or whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But
yes, good. So impact and urgency. Third, resources required. What's the cost in time, money, or effort? Risks. What are the potential negative consequences? Stakeholder support. How will this be received by colleagues and superiors? Maybe you have a short list of superiors and colleagues that are important to you. It doesn't have to be everybody.
And just be careful with those last two high S's. Risks and stakeholder support are the two that you're most likely to overestimate, just because you tend to see more risks and you tend to overestimate, you overvalue people's opinions.
It's so funny because it's the reverse of what we would suggest for how long you think it'll take, right?
Yeah.
So when people are so bad at predicting how long something will take, a really great example for me recently has been, and I will say, I grew up in a very small town. It is very quick to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that. I grew up in a town where the main street is less than 5 miles long. So going anywhere was always under 15 minutes. So that was a bad place to establish a framework for how long it takes to get somewhere. Now that I live in a much bigger city and I use Apple Maps all the time, mm-hmm. like always, partially to make sure I'm going to be on time, mm-hmm. right? Not because I don't know where I'm going, although sometimes we don't know where we're going. I have found that my default assumption is it will take 10 minutes to get there. That is false. It is 20. It's 20. It doesn't matter if it's down the street, air quotes, it's 20 mm-hmm. in a city. It just is. In the place where I grew up, it's 10. And here, it's just 20. Now, unfortunately, I don't know, because I don't track time in my hometown of how far it, mm-hmm. how long it takes to get to HEB. Although it is 1.5 miles from the house, so it's pretty quick. I don't know if, you know, it's my standard that I set too early and that's what's wrong. I do know that I inherently assume it will take less time. And I think this is a human thing. Lots of people do it. So you have to not outsize your risks and stakeholder support numbers and not undersize your time assumptions.
Yes.
Take what you think it will, take the time you think it will take and add 50%.
Absolutely.
And then when you come in before your deadline, call me and thank me.
We'll give you Kate's number at the end.
Ooh, yeah, that'll be super fun. I did mention Mike's really fun one is the highest. We would recommend, though, when you're doing this, whatever scale you use, if you're going to use numbers, the higher the score, the more important the decision. This doesn't mean you should necessarily take more time over it. If you give it a 5 on the urgency scale because it's highly time sensitive, that means you need to devote all your attention to it, not that you need to take more time to decide.
Right. If it's really time sensitive, you need to decide, you need to do something in the next 2 hours and your score is 5 times 5, 25, that doesn't mean you need to take 3 days to make a decision. It means you need to decide in the next 2 hours and you need to do nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I suddenly realized that when I was doing this and I was like, oh, there's a real flaw in this system. Yeah. Another way to look at decisions is just to follow whatever was done before. So, for example, for small decisions like how to design a document, you can just use a previous document as a template. You can just have a rule that says, whenever I create a new document, I'll use an old one as a template. And it just eliminates all doubt and indecision when the time comes. And talking of Mike, when we went to launch Career Tools, Mark said to me, so what's your plan for launching Career Tools? And I said, I don't know. How did you launch Manager Tools? And he went, we just did. So I didn't have a plan. My plan was just to follow whatever they'd done for Manager Tools. They didn't have a plan, so and I had to make one. So that strategy doesn't always work. But if you have something you can follow, following the last time, assuming it was successful, is a good strategy.
And I would suggest for highest especially.
Mm-hmm.
That would be valuable for them.
And if you're in the software or product development worlds, there is a bunch of frameworks that are used to prioritize and decide which features are most important. So if you use MOSCO or CANO or WSJF, I don't know if you spell those or if you say them, or similar frameworks every day, you might be able to adapt those to help you make decisions more quickly.
Mm-hmm. I'm currently reading a book about Unix. That's what all those kind of... It's a great book. Wendy just made a face. It's a great book. You've probably read it. The Cuckoo's Egg?
I have not.
Oh, it's so good. It's about hackers. A hacker, specifically, in the 80s. And it's at the start of the internet. And it's so much fun to read because they're talking about what the internet could be. Sometimes, like, tangentially. But it's about someone who hacked into the labs at Berkeley and then went into White Sands and went into missile places, and MIT just went through all these networks when the internet didn't yet fully exist or wasn't being utilized the way it is now. And it's really great. And those frameworks that you mentioned just now just reminded me of
Unix. I'll put it on my list for my vacation.
Yes, do. It's so good. I'm rereading it. This is the third time I've read it.
What's the biggest impact you can have for your managerial complement? Teach them repeatable behaviors that drive results and retention. It's not that hard. Often, great professionals are not that taught. Don't deny them the privilege of being effective. Have Manager Tools deliver on-site or virtually our effective manager training. Contact Maggie to learn more about how your group can receive a significant discount with annual licensing benefits that sustain their rollout for a year after the training itself. Email today, customerservice@manager-tools.com to learn more.
That brings us to don't overcommit. The high S overcommits because they want to serve the person who asked them to complete a task for them. The other styles will also overcommit, but for different reasons. They're less concerned about the people involved. D's and C's, high D's and high C's, can rationalize that the task is small or has little value and therefore not complete it, even though they committed to somebody. The high I believes that they will be able to charm their way out of any negative consequences of not completing a task for somebody. Only the high S will feel the pressure of the commitment and want to do the task to their own detriment. In my personal life, I know someone who is always late to what you invited them to because they said that they would be at four different places. And they have been to all those places and they are late to where they said they would be that you asked them to
go. Exactly. And that's the trick to not overcommitting for high S's. The answer is to think about what you've promised already before you say yes to this new ask.
Yeah, you said you'd be at my party.
Mm-hmm.
So you should probably come.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'll be very sad.
If saying yes to something new means compromising another effort that you've already agreed to, then you either have to say no to this request or negotiate to reduce other work or negotiate the expected quality or deadlines of the tasks. So you say no to Kate's party, or you say no to somebody else who's already asked you to be somewhere else, or you go and say to them, can I do this another day? Because taking on new tasks that compromise existing ones is just irresponsible. And you have a strong desire for integrity and for keeping your promises. So just use that to ensure you limit your work and keep the quality of your work high.
Mm-hmm. And be present in the things that you've committed to. Remember as well that overcommitment leads to a broader inability to serve. We talked a little bit, I mentioned burnout earlier. It's an overused phrase. And long-term overcommitment could lead to you being unable to work at all due to physical or mental exhaustion or illness or simply lack of time.
Mm-hmm.
There is not enough time in the world to do all of the things that people are going to ask you to do. And there are, it should be noted, people that we're all exposed to, there's people out there, I think the term that used to be popular is energy vampires. There are people out there who take advantage. I don't know that they always mean to. I know some people who don't mean to. They simply get used to a person who says yes. And so then they continue to ask. I don't know that it's not a malicious intention. Those people though, there's likely some of them at your work. And so you may be subjected to asks from people who are just used to you saying yes, who maybe even don't necessarily need help. They could do it themselves. They are also capable. If you overcommit, you will suffer some days during some timeframes because of having too much to do. And again, because people underestimate how much time things take, you're probably expecting that you could do more than you actually can. And if you think about it this way, the short-term joy of serving the person in front of you who's asking you right now has to be balanced with your long-term ability to continue to serve your organization and also to maintain your mental...
Yes. You have to continue being here.
Robustness. Yeah. Yeah. To a certain extent, I also find that if I'm overcommitted, I don't always enjoy the things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always just about enjoyment. I struggle to concentrate on the thing in front of me because I know I have less time. I feel that pressure. Overcommitting is something that can really cause a detriment to both yourself and your work.
Yeah. So don't do that.
Yes.
Okay. On the other hand, I guess this plays into it. If you're overcommitted, you can't do this. So maintain an efficient pace. So high S's can easily find themselves behind on a project or left behind on their career because their idea of an efficient pace of work is not the same as the people around them. So if they're overcommitted and they have too much work, they're not going to get to the work at the same speed as everybody thinks they ought to. That's part of their problem. But also part of their problem is they take longer to do the work than other people think. So the high S and to some extent the high C measure their output by different standards than the D's and the I's. The S's want to know that the work's been done well, that they've thought it through and that it's acceptable to everybody concerned. We talked about decision-making. They want to make sure that everybody has had a chance to give an input to the work and that they are happy with it proceeding. Even setting a meeting time includes for them concerns about the attendees' childcare arrangements and their other project responsibilities and what time they like to eat lunch. A high D just sets the time that works for them and expects people to speak up if it doesn't work. And all of that care that the high S takes means that they take longer to do the same task than other people do.
It's not to say that the work is poorer simply because of its lack of speed. In some cases, it's better for being done more slowly. And the culmination of taking more time on every task means the high S doesn't achieve as much as others each week, month, and year, and that it has an impact on their career. They're less productive.
Which is sad because they're trying so hard.
Yes. Yeah. And it's simply that each profile has a scale of attention to detail. The high S's attention to detail level is higher than the high D. And that makes the high D faster. It doesn't mean that the high D's approach is better.
No.
It means that it's faster.
Yes.
It's like that old joke about math.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good at math. I'm fast. Okay. Well, it's important to be accurate in math. We make a lot of fun jokes at Manager Tools about math. Even this morning, I made another math joke. My engineering background is showing, I suppose. That's not what we're here to talk about. It really, truly is beneficial in some work and in some cases to be so focused on details and to be deliberate and to be methodical and consistent and predictable. It doesn't mean that we have to do it with every single bit of work upon which we are asked to execute.
It's the same with the decision making, right? Sometimes the way that a high S makes decisions is the right way to go. But if you do it for every single decision, you will make way fewer decisions than are necessary. So the way we talked about speeding up decision-making, some of those methods will help with speeding up work. So if you're setting up a meeting time for a one-off internal team meeting, it doesn't need that much thinking. If I'm going to set up a team meeting with three of the people that I work with every day, I'm going to pick a time and I'm going to tell them this time. And I'm going to expect that if Katie can't make that time, she's going to tell me. Other techniques that provide a visual of how much work is getting done can also help. So often our work is spread out over email and instant messenger and various spreadsheets and software systems, and it's hard to see what progress we're actually making. So if you have a daily achievement log or an engineering log or somewhere where you're logging how much actual tasks you're getting done and review it weekly. You mentioned earlier getting things done. That has a weekly review built into it. That can help a high S and come to that any DISC profile. See how much progress they're actually making for the hours that they're sitting in their office chair. And it also is useful when it comes to review time, when the high S needs to demonstrate their progress against their goal to prevent that falling behind phenomenon. Who put that word in the show notes?
It was you.
It was me, yes. That falling behind experience that we mentioned previously.
Remember, too, that moving more quickly is not just beneficial for your career. Moving more quickly means that you're able to help more people within your company and customers outside of it. You're able to do more of the very purpose of your work. So you're able to dedicate more cycles, reps, to the purpose of your work and why you're at your work and the mission of your work. And that can be a good thing, a really good thing.
So being a high S is not a strength or a weakness any more than being a high D or an I or a C is. Like, it's neutral. All the label means is that we have a set of natural behaviors that may or may not support our effectiveness in a specific situation. And we can change those behaviors anytime we like, as long as we think about it first. And using our time effectively means being able to serve more people. And if that means sometimes acting like one of those mean high D's or those ridiculous high I's, sometimes, then it's going to be worth it. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.